It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on a Tuesday. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. A lot to get to here on an off-season Tuesday. And we're going to start with something that you two talked about last week, and that was the off-season program, which is quickly approaching. The Browns start their program on April 15th. They will hear from Kevin Stefanski on April 16th. You know, we'll hear from Andrew Berry that week. And then we really get to start watching practices in May. They're going to have a full off-season program this year because they didn't get the Hall of Fame game. So they will go the full 3 weeks of OTAs and the full week of minicamp this year. So you guys kind of talked about the offense. And so today let's sort of address the defense and kind of what there is to pay attention to on that side. We can get into the special team side of it too as well. Mary Kay, when you look at those two sides of the football, what's something that you're really interested in when we finally get a chance to get eyeballs on these guys and hear players talk to us after practices and things like that? What are you kind of looking for?
Well, there are a number of new role players, so there's going to be a different energy, a different vibe on the defense a little bit. You've got Jordan Hicks at linebacker. You've got Devin Bush now at linebacker. And I think that one's really interesting. I don't necessarily think they're looking to hit a home run with Devin Bush, even though he was a former first rounder for the Steelers, highly touted and got off to a tremendous start as a rookie. He's trying to put the pieces of his career back together, so to speak. So I'm anxious to see what he can do. And then you've got Quentin Jefferson stepping in there at defensive tackle. So on the defensive side of the ball, you've got some new role players, and then they're running it back with Z, with Mo, with Shelby. I'm on a first name basis with these guys, with Maurice Hurst, with Shelby Harris. So they're mostly running it back, but there are some new faces. And then there will be, I think, you know, just a tangible loss in terms of Anthony Walker Jr. and Sione Takitaki, guys that we've just had around for a number of years and that you just get super familiar with. So there will be, I think, just a very new vibe on defense.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this defense. Like I said, I always have too much time to think, but I've been thinking a lot about this defense and just what is the expectation for them? And I think, Mary Kay, you addressed this actually in a AMK. Like, can they be as good as last year? And I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I mean, some of these guys are a year older. So, you know, it was historic, some of the numbers they put up last year. The schedule is tougher. We've talked about that. The quarterbacks they're facing are tougher. So I don't think they're going to be as historic as they were a year ago. But I still think they're a really good defense, Ashley. And I just want to see how some of these pieces fall into place. Like, I'm actually really curious. I think at this time a year ago, we all liked Martin Emerson and thought Martin Emerson was really good. I don't know if we necessarily thought he was going to establish himself as like this team's second best cornerback that quickly. At least I didn't. And here we are going into this offseason program. And it's like, hey, Martin Emerson's their second best cornerback. So how does that look on the field with Greg Newsome and Denzel? And how does that all sort out? I think there's some interesting things in the back end to keep an eye on too. Even with all this stability, there's still some interesting dominoes that could fall here.
I think with the safeties too, since you talked about the corners, of course, we have Grant Delpit coming back from a season-ending groin injury, an injury that ended up being season-ending. Of course, I know Andrew Berry said if Grant had had one more week, aka if they had won that wild card game in Houston, he probably would have been able to come back for a playoff run. You also have Rodney McLeod, who's working his way back from the biceps injury. You have a couple of young guys and Ronnie Hickman, DeAnthony Bell, who had to play a lot through unexpected, I guess, circumstances because of the other injuries in that room. So I'm fascinated by the back end of this defense still, but at the same time, I do think it's weird to be going into this spot with them where they, oh, and I forgot Juan Thornhill. Juan Thornhill had, you know, calf injuries that he struggled with. He was very open with about at the end of the season there on locker cleanout day. I know we talked about he never really felt right this year. So that's another guy too. He has to take a step up, but it is strange, I think, overall to head into this offseason program and have that linebacker room be so different, because I was just thinking in my time covering this team, I don't know what a linebacker room in Cleveland looks like without Anthony Walker and Sione Takitaki. And I think JOK taking the steps he did was great. I'm very curious to watch him alongside these new guys and maybe see how that dynamic changes too. But even in the front of the defense, I'm curious to ask some of those guys about running it back and all coming back together, because I think we've talked about it as a negative, but I think a lot of them are going to really view it as a positive and kind of be talking up that dynamic that they had last year. But they're going to have to do a lot more to back up that talk this year. But I'm fascinated to kind of hear just what they have to say about this whole idea of running it back on this side of the ball, essentially.
Yeah, I think I feel a little burnt by what happened in 2021 when that defense was like, oh my gosh, that was like a top five defense in the second half of the season. And they were amazing. And then the whole storyline was, hey, they're running it back and think about how good they're going to be. And then we know how that went the following year. Joe Woods ended up losing his job at the end of that season. So I think that there's a part of that. There's kind of a scar from that, Mary Kay. But look, I mean, it could work. These guys are, I mean, we know who Miles Garrett is. We know Za'Darius is talented and the pressure he can create. We know this back end is still, that's still a really young, talented defensive backfield. So I absolutely think that running it back could be just fine. There's just a part of me that's a little scarred from what has happened when we've had other instances on both sides of the ball where they've decided to run it back.
Well, here are some reasons why running it back might work in 2024. First of all, Miles Garrett. If they play their cards right, Miles Garrett will have consistent production all the way through the season and through the playoffs. That's important because we know that Miles kind of tailed off at the end and then he did not have his best game in the playoffs. That's not what you want. You want to pace yourself with Miles and make sure that he finishes strong. So that's one thing. And then Za'Darius, now that they've had Za'Darius for an entire season, I think they can do a nice after action report on him and see what they can do to make sure that he's a little bit more productive. They got a little bit more out of him towards the end of the season than they did sack production wise in the beginning of the season. So maybe they need to look at some of that film and see what they did in that regard. I think that's important. Then I think we tend to forget when we're talking about some of these guys coming back from injuries, we sort of forget that Oboe had a torn pec that really cost him the final four or five games of this season. And having him come back healthy, I think is going to be huge for this team because you can really get that edge rotation going again. And then Alex Wright quietly produced five sacks. So maybe there's a little bit more to him than meets the eye. Maybe the new defensive line coach, Jacques Césaire, will be able to get a little bit more even out of Alex Wright. We've talked about Siaki Ika. Does he have something in him that we haven't really had an opportunity to see yet? They thought so when they drafted him in the third round. So it's time to see what he's got. So there are plenty of guys coming back off of injuries that you kind of forget about a number of them. And then you mix that with this new infusion of talent and they could be onto something.
Yeah, Ashley, Mary Kay mentioned a name there that we haven't really talked a ton about, and that's Alex Wright. And like, I'll be honest, coming out of his rookie year, I kind of thought maybe that might end up being a wash. He was productive last year. He did show signs of life last year. And I think, you know, towards the end of the season, that Cincinnati game was so weird because like Miles didn't talk to us that week. It was Alex Wright because Miles wasn't playing. So Alex Wright got the Friday press conference. It was bizarre, but I thought he was interesting talking about how he sort of needed to learn how to be a pro, learn how to use his hands, all sorts of different things. We saw Miles mentoring him a lot at the Greenbrier. really kind of taking him under his wing in between reps. There could really be something there with Alex Wright. I don't know that he's ever going to be like a 10 sack guy, but if he's your third or fourth guy, there's probably something there. I'm a lot more optimistic about him now than I was, last offseason.
I think when you look at Alex Wright's time here, what was always really obvious was there was something raw about him that they liked. And we know he was one of those guys that when he was younger, wasn't super focused on football early on. Like, he wasn't a football prodigy. He was actually, of course, famously, as we remember from rookie minicamp that year, interested more in being in the band and playing music and that sort of stuff. So it took him a while, I think, to come along. And then, of course, he goes to UAB, which you're just not facing the same kind of competition. So he was open, I think, this year. And in his rookie year, everyone kind of knew he was playing more early on than anyone expected. A big part of that was Jadavian couldn't get going. He was injured. Chase Winovich, who was supposed to be their number three guy that year, was injured for a majority of the season. So they had to rely on him a lot. And I think that's a big part of what obviously spurned them going out and getting Za'Darius Smith last offseason. But when he talked, I thought it was really interesting. Even earlier in the year, I talked to him after, I'm looking at this story right now. This was from September of last year, after the Tennessee game, when he got his first career sack. And he talked about, as a rookie, being so impatient in more ways than one. And obviously he got to play, but when it came to closing out and getting to quarterbacks, he talked about learning how to take that extra step. And like we said, he talked about his hands a lot at the end of the season last year. I think he really learned and picked up little things, and it just kind of took him a while to be like, hey, this isn't UAB anymore. It's going to be a lot different taking down NFL quarterbacks and going against NFL tackles every single game. So I definitely think that it's understandable that there's something still there with him. And I agree, if he's your number three guy, I think that's definitely feasible. One day he could definitely become that. I think it's great they have Oboe now still too, and obviously Z, but he showed more, I think, in terms of getting to quarterbacks last year than he did as a rookie, and he did so in less snaps.
Okay, so we wanted to talk about special teams too, and this sort of brings us an opportunity to talk about a signing that the Browns made on Tuesday morning, and that was bringing in a local, someone who played at Glenville, a special teams ace, if you will. And that's something that the Browns, look, they lost Mike Ford, so they need to replace some guys. Justin Hardy signing here from the Jets. Mary Kay, I think this is interesting. I know you guys talked about the new kickoff rule a little bit last week, and Lance Reisland was texting us about this new kickoff rule. Like, there's going to be returns, and one of the results of that is the gunner all of a sudden becomes really important. We talk about him a lot in punt coverage, of course, but now guys like Hardy and Tony Brown, who the Browns signed, Pierre Strong was a surprisingly good coverage guy in the return game. Matt Adams is still a free agent. I don't know if he'll be back, but these guys who are like special teams aces who can get downfield and cover all of a sudden become really important because there's going to be a lot of kick returns. And I thought Lance made an interesting point when he was texting us, like, you might see some teams put star players back there in big moments now, for a return or two. So one of the effects of this is it helps. Sure, it helps a guy like Nyheim Hines or whoever else, but now these gunners are super important when it comes to the field position game.
They really are. In fact, Justin Hardy, who of course comes from Glenville High School and is coming back to his hometown here and so excited about it, he tweeted or X'd or whatever we're calling it, that how important special teamers are going to be this year, how important gunners are going to be, how important returners are going to be. And it's so true. I'm looking forward to one of these days soon, hopefully talking to Bubba Ventrone about this. I'm sure he's going to be over the moon about it, excited. It brings the kickoff return back into vogue and back into an exciting play. There were very few kickoff returns last year, and there will be plenty, plenty more now. So not only is it back, it'll be back in a very creative way. It'll be interesting to see how these brilliant coaches will come up with strategies and tactics for how to make this work to their advantage. And so therefore, yes, you do have important players like Justin Hardy that, you know, that will be even more pivotal now than they would have been. And you have to wonder, would they have had to go out and get a Justin Hardy had the kickoff rule not changed?
Yeah, I mean, the timing of it is interesting because it came after that happened. And so, I just wonder if I'm with you. Would they have made this move? Would they have added this player, or would they have been happy to bring in some undrafted guys and some, you know, draft picks down the depth chart and let them kind of fight for those jobs? And Ashley, that's an interesting thing here, too, because we know special teams is those guys' path onto the roster. Like a Ronnie Hickman, you know, a Mahmoud Diabate. Special teams gets them on the roster. And this creates even more of an opportunity for those guys because maybe there's two or three more roster spots now available just for, you know, Bubba and his special teams unit.
Yeah, I think this new kickoff rule is going to impact a lot. On top of, as we talked about last week, being a genuinely fun play, it sounds like from the way that it's being talked about and watching the diagrams and reading the rules itself, it's just going to add more interest to that part of the game. But in turn, as we've pointed out, it just kind of adds an emphasis for some of these maybe overlooked skills in a lot of guys. And I know we've talked about before guys having value as gunners and how important that can be. And I think it was a big part of, obviously, last year when they signed guys like Matt Adams and Mike Ford, they went out and got these core special teamers for Bubba to help him kind of set the tone. But now there's just this added emphasis on that role, I think, because the play does not start until the returner has the ball now. So you have to have guys that are going to truck it and be able to move down the field. It's just going to look totally different. I think it's going to be a lot more aggressive. And you need players who are going to be up to that challenge. And I do think a lot of times it is those guys that know that's going to be their path to a 53-man roster.
I am curious what Bubba's going to say about the rule, because I think I remember last year he was not a huge fan of the XFL-style kickoff. But I wonder if he's changed his tune now that he has to deal with it. And it's going to be like, this is what you have to do. And I know he was always a big advocate, Mary Kay, of like, you can't take the kickoff out of the game. It's a safe play. I can't imagine a football game that doesn't start with a kickoff. So I would imagine that it wouldn't surprise me if his viewpoint has evolved on this, because this is something that could potentially save a play that is very important to him.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it really did. And I think that he should probably get really excited about it, because, again, it not only saved it, it enhanced it. It put it on the map, and it's going to make for one of the most exciting plays of the game. So I think he'll embrace it. I think he'll love it. Can't wait to talk to him about it and see what he thinks and what are some of the possibilities going on inside his mind right now, because it is very unorthodox if you haven't gotten a chance to see how it's going to look. They're lining up so close to each other. You know, you don't have that, you know, that big area where you've got to run a million yards before anybody gets there. You know, I mean, it's just completely different. So I think it's going to be fun. I know all the special teamers are going to be excited about it. And it just opens up a whole new world of strategy. So I, for one, am all for it.
Okay, I want to ask one more special teams question, because I didn't get to talk about this. But I'm gonna make this really simple. Do you believe that Cade York will ever be the Cleveland Browns kicker again? Or is this just a developmental move and maybe eventually they trade him or he goes someplace else? But Mary Kay, do you think he'll ever be the Browns kicker again?
I could see it. I could definitely see it. Dustin Hopkins is heading into the final year of his contract, and he has a cap charge of over $3 million this year. Now, Andrew Berry did say that Dustin Hopkins is the kicker for this season, barring some unforeseen circumstance. So Dustin is still the man for this. But I do think that they saw something in Cade. They brought him back here. And I don't think they would have done that if they didn't anticipate that he would have a chance to be their kicker again someday. I think they are hoping for one of those turnarounds like some other kickers have had, Daniel Carlson among them, that some other young kickers have had, where they stumble out of the gate a little bit and then they figure it out. That's what they hope happens with Cade. And I think they would like to reap the benefits of that turnaround.
Yeah, I've seen people speculate, and you mentioned it, obviously, with Dustin heading for free agency after this season. I think if I had to bet on it, I would still bet that Dustin would be their kicker 2 years from now, unless he's hurt or he really tails off. He's only, 33? I have it open here. He's 33. He'll turn 34 on October 1st. Kickers can go a while. So it wouldn't surprise me if, like, Dustin even got some kind of extension. But that being said, Ashley, maybe there is a world where even 2 years from now, Cade York is back kicking for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know. They didn't bring him back for nothing, I guess.
Yeah, I do think a lot of it is what Mary Kay talked about, that right now with Cade, they might still be in the developmental stage. But of course, it's always stuck with me that even last year, they would have welcomed him back on the practice squad. I do think part of that is obviously, hey, you used a fourth round pick on him, and what Mary Kay said, you want to reap the benefits of that in whatever way you can still, even if you didn't want him to be your kicker right now, you couldn't trust him. I'm really curious, is he ultimately going to be one of those guys like the Daniel Carlson example that we use all the time, that eventually after a couple years of struggling or struggling early, you figure it out and you do become a good kicker. I've always thought that that was still in the cards for him potentially, but I'm very curious. I don't, like you said, kickers can last a long time in this league. It's not like other positions. So even though Cade is still very young, he's still in his early 20s, Dustin's in his early 30s, there's like more than a 10-year age gap there. I am very curious to see how long Dustin will be here. I think definitely he's the guy for right now. He did way more than enough to prove that last year, but I'll be curious to see if Cade reaps the benefits of this down the road. I could definitely see this scenario where he is the Browns kicker in the years to come.
I do think it'll help Cade that he'll, every time he goes to kick in training camp or OTAs or whatever, it's not going to be like a world stopping event. So I think that'll probably be good for Cade as we go through this process. All right, we're going to take a break. And then on the other side, we're going to talk about something a little bit different here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And welcome back to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. So this week is a little bit different for us. We're pre-recording some pods as we go through the week. You're going to hear a draft pod coming up at the end of the week with Lance Reisland and Tim Bielik. So those are coming back. I asked for questions for those from our Football Insider subscribers. So if you want to do that, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. That's also how you can get involved with our Hey Mary Kay pods. But the women's Final Four is in Cleveland this year. And Ashley, you put up a story today about when you actually attended the women's Final Four. It's got a picture of you when you were like 13 years old, standing in front of one of those basketballs that they put on the barriers. Yeah, outside of what was then, I guess it was probably
Quicken Loans.
Gund Arena then. Yeah, it was probably Quicken Loans Arena by then. But so it's a big event, right? It's a big event coming to Cleveland. We've talked a lot about, you know, big events coming here with the stadium and a potential new stadium and things like that, maybe eventually getting a men's Final Four here. So I know, Ashley, you're going to be attending the championship game on Sunday. I'm actually going to be covering the event Thursday through Sunday, so that should be fun. But again, you put that column up today. I think you kind of understand the significance of this, having experienced it back when it was here the first time, and really kind of how different things are now, even for the women's game.
I think it's so different now. I've never seen anything like this with women's basketball. And like I said, I mean, I was a women's basketball fan before I was a sports writer. Like, that's kind of the whole point of the article. I just loved basketball. I loved sports for so many different reasons. And yeah, look at the funny pictures of me. I sent them to Dan and Mary Kay yesterday. I'm like, I love my Nike Shocks and I have my flare jeans on and cut. Like, you couldn't tell me anything back then. So I truly appreciate this, I think, on a different level. It's also cool to see more people open their eyes to the game. I think so much is different now with NIL, with social media, which was kind of just starting out back in 2007 when it was here last, which is kind of crazy. It makes me wonder what kind of impact a player like Candace Parker or Sylvia Fowles would have had back then when those teams were here. But it was still really special even back then. I think the Caitlin Clark effect is really cool. I think what I'm excited about is hopefully for some of these people who have had their eyes open to women's basketball because of the popularity of Caitlin Clark, maybe they'll get to appreciate some other things too. Like, I think it'd be really cool to see Paige Bueckers get her due finally, who was supposed to be the number one player in this class, but has had a career that was tainted by an ACL injury last year. And she's playing some of the best basketball I think I've ever seen right now. That game is going to be so exciting on Friday, Dan. I know you probably can't wait to write about it. And for people just even appreciate like what South Carolina has done over the last 5 to 10 years, there's so much. I just hope that more eyes get open to how amazing the women's game is. What these girls are doing is so special. And yeah, I mean, I think I got emotional writing that column for so many different reasons, which I talk about, but it's just such a cool experience. And my thing would be like, if you're debating going to anything, I know the convention center downtown has some free stuff for fans that starts Thursday. I think there's a watch party at some point outside the arena, maybe on Sunday, but I think people should try to go and like take your kids. Like, it was such a formative experience for me to be like 13, 14 and see that for so many different reasons. But I think it's ultimately just like, these are young women who work so hard to get to this point. They're not afraid to have personalities. It's just going to be a fun time, but it's also, I think, something that is going to stick with people if you get a chance to go, even if it's not to attend an actual game.
Yeah. And I think I remember watching those games last year, right? And just kind of understanding like, well, this is coming to Cleveland next year. This is going to be a really transformative year, I think. And one of the announcers on the game last night, the USC UConn game, I think put it best. Like, the women's game has always been great. So people are paying attention to it more now than they ever have. And I think it really does feel, with Caitlin Clark making it here, let's be honest, that was enormous that she got to Cleveland. Obviously UConn, South Carolina, yeah, NC State's kind of the wild card in all of this, but like, this does feel like a moment. And when you compare it even to, I mean, I love watching the men's tournament, but the game, just the game itself is just, it moves faster. There's more scoring for the most part. You know, the shooting is really, the pace and space era has really helped a ton. And it's just at least to me, over the last year, it's been a better product to watch. So I think, Mary Kay, this just feels like it's a moment, you know, and I don't know where this all leads to, but it feels like over the last year, and when you sit there last night and on social media, all you see is people talking about LSU, Iowa. And then, of course, they follow that up with UConn, USC. I can't remember the last time that's necessarily been the case with the women's college game.
I can't either. And I think it's so cool that the explosion and the interest in the women's game coincides with the Final Four being here. It's just the perfect storm. I mean, Dan, you're going to be covering the games. You're going to be covering the Final Four. The tournament is going to be so cool and so much fun. And it's going to be a huge, huge national story because there are so many eyes on women's college basketball now. I mean, I see it every single time I feel like I'm walking through the living room, there's stuff on ESPN or whatever about the women's game. It didn't used to be like that. I can promise you, we can all promise you that in 2007, that was not the case. Nobody was paying attention. At least the all eyes of the nation were not on it. And now they are. And of course, I think Caitlin Clark has a lot to do with that. Were you sweating that out, Dan, about whether or not Caitlin Clark was coming to Cleveland for this tournament?
I sort of, I mean, look, obviously, yes. If I could have had my way, yes, I would want Caitlin Clark to be here, right? You want to see her in person. You want to have that experience. But that being said, I mean, LSU with Angel Reese and Kim Mulkey, and I mean, that the whole LSU circus, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. would have certainly been an experience. You know, I was certainly, I think the USC UConn was kind of a no lose, like either of those teams making it would have been fine. But yes, certainly having Caitlin Clark there is a huge deal for this entire event. And I like the ticket prices, the resale ticket prices shot through the roof yesterday. They were already high, but they shot through the roof last night after Iowa won that game for sure. And by the way, Ashley, I mean, Caitlin Clark, I don't think it's crazy to say she's the most famous, by men's and women, she's the most famous college basketball player in the world. She's doing State Farm commercials with Jimmy Butler.
I know, right? It's that part of it's cool. And I think, again, it just kind of speaks to the rise in the women's game and what people like about her and the way she's gotten to show off her personality some and be a good shooter, and people respect that, and her court vision. It's cool. I mean, it's definitely a show, but I do agree with you. Even if Iowa wouldn't have won, there really was, to me, and we were texting about this with Chris Easterling, I don't think there would have been a lose situation in that scenario for Cleveland. I think I'm kind of bummed still that, and I've been complaining about this, that they put LSU and Iowa in the same region and we don't get a chance to kind of have that game last night in Cleveland, I think would have been really cool. But if USC would have won and people would have got to see Juju Watkins, that would have been cool. You outlined that LSU team and how many personalities they have. I think Flo J. Johnson's one of the best players in basketball, along with Angel Reese at LSU. There would have been a lot of cool storylines. And like Mary Kay said, I don't think that 10 years ago that would have been a thing. And I think that's been the other cool thing as a fan of college basketball, of women's college basketball. There's just more parity now than there was even 5 years ago, where it just felt like the women's tournament was so predictable. It'd be all four number one teams and UConn would probably win, or they'd at least be in the final game. There's not that anymore. And I think that also makes it exciting.
Someone was tweeting yesterday or Xing yesterday about the fact that the difference in the women's college game, and I can't remember who it was, maybe you guys will remember, they were talking about the court vision and how that's so improved. The shooting has always been good. The threes were always good, all that kind of stuff. But how just the court vision and the smart basketball that's going on in the game. And I thought that was very interesting, because that's what people really like when they watch something. They want to see great strategy and good vision and smart play. And I think we're getting that.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a high level. You know, like you're seeing, I think that's a really good point. I didn't see that tweet, but yeah, or X. We need to figure that out. that X formerly tweet, I guess, is how we say it. But yeah, I mean, just the whole package. And again, you watch a game like that LSU-Iowa game last night, and you compare it to what we saw, and like the men's game has become so much slower and it's so much more clogged up. And like, you just don't see it. This almost feels like what the men's college game was in the 90s. Like, it's fast. It's creating stars. There's rivalries. Players are coming back. You know, like you mentioned, Ashley, NIL has added a whole new level of recognition for all of these players. It's I'll see women's players in commercials and I'll know who they are. And then I saw a men's North Carolina player in a commercial during March Madness. I had no idea who he was, a guy from North Carolina. So it's just that's why I think this is so significant, because I feel like the men's game has been going one direction and the women's game is so clearly going another direction. And I don't know if it'll ever pass it, but it's certainly got a chance to reach really high heights here. With all of the star power. And it's just kind of cool it's happening here.
And I also think real quick that I think that the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission does a phenomenal job of bringing big events to Cleveland. I think we do a great job of hosting these big events. I think all eyes will be on Cleveland. It's what a weekend it's going to be, right? With that and then the eclipse on Monday. I'm wondering how this is all going to go with, you know, traffic and all the people. And it's going to be interesting. But the eyes of the nation are going to be on Cleveland Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And it's cool. We deserve to be in the spotlight. It's been awesome. Ashley, your column was great. Dan, I can't wait to read your coverage of the games. And I just think it's a lot of fun.
And Guardians opening day.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, good luck to Hoynsey and Noga sitting at Progressive Field in the dark.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. Those guys already have to get there so early, and now they're going to have to contend with all the eclipse travelers coming into town to do the same thing. But
oh my goodness, I forgot about that.
But yeah, Dan, I mean, I'm so excited to read your games. I think on Friday especially you're going to have some really good games to cover. I still think my pick is it's South Carolina's title to lose. I will die on that hill happily, but I'm happy, I guess, UConn making it to the Final Four. I don't think a lot of people have that in their women's brackets. That USC team's been so much fun, but yeah, I'm glad I get to go to something as a fan, too. I mean, we talked about this last week. I'm not working the games because I'm in a wedding this weekend for one of my former teammates, actually, talking about the impacts of women's college basketball. But I'm excited to just kind of be one of you guys and be a fan and get to enjoy something. I know it's going to feel weird not writing about the actual games, but I'm doing some stuff this week to kind of help Dan out and the other people covering it. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Why do I feel like you're going to jump in and write something on Sunday?
Yeah, right.
I know, right?
I have a feeling that you're going
just
to
go jump home. Out of
I'm going to look behind me, and Ashley's going to be standing at one of those press conferences.
Can you imagine sneaking my way down, banned from racket mortgage for life? No, no. I'll let you will write beautifully, Dan. I can't wait.
Well, I don't know about that part, but it should be a fun weekend in Cleveland for the Women's Final Four. So, like I mentioned, get subscribed to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We got a full week coming your way, including our first draft pod with Lance and Tim, which, like we did last year, similar format. So that should be fun. We'll have a HAMK pod coming your way as well. Football Insider is how you can get involved in that. Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. And, of course, find us on Instagram, Orange Brown Talk, and on YouTube, search Cleveland Browns on Cleveland.com. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.